crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Hello and welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nachtigall. I'm coming to you today from Jerusalem, Israel, as per usual, where we've had just a really busy week across the Middle East, a couple of really important events. Two more are going to happen next week with the moving of the embassy tomorrow, the U.S. embassy here to Jerusalem. And then also the day after, the Nakba Day celebrations, if you can call them that, that with the Palestinians and the March of Return is going to culminate on the Gaza border. However, I do want to focus on the events of the past week. Looking back into the previous administration in the United States, Israel kind of hasn't changed course that much since then, but it has been the change in the White House that has changed America's position and how much that is bolstering Israel in the Middle East. But what's interesting about what took place last week, these two events, is you have another player kind of sitting back in the middle of both the United States and Israel, and that is Europe. And in response to both of these events, they had an interesting opinion, and we're going to cover that today. And those two events, of course, were the pullout by the United States, Mr. Trump announcing that he is no longer going to be part, or the United States is no longer going to be a part of the nuclear deal that was signed, or that came into effect back in January 16, 2016. It was never signed. But he said, we're out of that, and we're going to slap back sanctions on Iran and also on companies that deal inside Iran, particularly to do with their nuclear weapons program, and much more than that. And so we had that took place, and we'll talk briefly about that. But we also had the decision by Israel after the Iranians attacked, the IRGC attacked from Syrian territory, 20 missiles fired into Israel, the overwhelming response from Israel, we'll talk about that as well, and Europe's response to that. Because what we see taking place right now in Europe is a calculus where they do not want to seem like they are a friend of Donald Trump at all, and yet they do want to show themselves to be a friend of Israel. But first, we're going to talk about Mr. Trump pulling out of the nuclear deal and what a hoopla that has caused in Europe. Because we did have in the lead up to this event, even going back, I guess it was 6 months ago, we had Mr. Trump saying when he decertified this back on October 15th, I think it was, 2017, he basically said, we've got about 6 months, just over 6 months before, you know, I'm going to pull out of this unless somebody fixes it, unless somebody fixes this deal. And so he was giving the Europeans, it seemed, 6 or 7 months to decide how they would do that. And even they were pushing right to the last minute, Mr. Macron, the French president, and the German leader, Angela Merkel as well, and even Boris Johnson, all of them of the UK trying to convince Trump to stay in the deal, trying to say that, well, we can work out something else on the side. But basically, it was too late. It was too late. And so Mr. Trump pulled out of that. And then just to look at the European media get so upset by this decision. And I want to quote just a little bit here from Spiegel. This is an editorial in Spiegel that showed up on May 11th, just a couple of days ago. It's entitled this, Trump deals painful blow to transatlantic ties. And this is how Klaus Brinkbaumer begins. And it's not too favorable, this first paragraph or two. But I want to read it because it does show how negative the, especially the German media, how negative their view is of the U.S. current U.S. president. Klaus Brinkbaumer says this at the beginning. Trump's renown is rooted in American hero myths. Trump says women like Carly Bruni lust after him, something that women like Carly Bruni vehemently deny. Trump says he is exorbitantly rich, yet Trump ran himself into the ground with his casinos to the point that he was $295 million in debt in 1990. He was bailed out by the banks and by his father. The greatest myth, though, has to do with Trump's alleged negotiating expertise. This, too, is nonsense. Trump was never proficient in the art of the deal. As a businessman, he paid far too much for substandard properties and has shown no patience as a politician. He isn't curious. His preparation is non-existent. Strategy and tactics are both foreign to him. Trump is only proficient in destruction, and that's what he does. So this is an editorial in Spiegel, the most popular news magazine in Europe. And apparently, Mr. Trump, the leader of the most powerful nation on Earth, is only proficient in destruction. It's what he does. Strategy and tactics are both foreign to him. Not the glowing praise that you would expect of a paper that came out of a nation that was basically built up with American dollars after World War II. Nevertheless, it continues this way. He backed out of the Paris Climate Agreement while promising a better deal for America. But nothing came of his promise, neither a plan nor meaningful talks. In Trump's Washington, the only thing that matters is dismantling the legacy of his predecessor, Barack Obama. Well, that is kind of true. That does matter to him. But that might be also because the legacy of Barack Obama, it's good if that is dismantled. Trump also, he continues, promised to improve Obama's healthcare plan, but the details are complex and bothersome. So Trump destroyed Obamacare, and he has done nothing to replace it. But then it says this, and this is what I want to focus on, because it gets to Trump's decision to pull out of the nuclear deal. Now, he is playing the same game on the world stage with the Iran nuclear deal. Trump refers to it as, quote, the worst deal ever, which is why he has now pulled the U.S. out of it. The negotiations that resulted in the deal in 2015 were a masterpiece of international diplomacy. There might be some argument about that. And then he says, but there are no plans in place to launch new talks. Trump wants to bring the Iran regime to its knees with sanctions, but domestic political considerations in Tehran make it unlikely the country will buckle. Leaders who demonstrate weakness in Iran are discarded. It seems more likely that they will close ranks. Iran-supported groups like Hezbollah are likely to pour fuel on the fire in conflicts in Yemen or Lebanon, as close as possible to Israel's border. Iran presumably won't pursue the path of extreme escalation, though, since that path wouldn't be beneficial. But it will likely cease allowing observers into the country, stop providing information on its uranium enrichment activities. It will seek to conceal what the West would like to know. And what are the benefits of Washington's radical move? There are none. Just chaos where there was once order. Just American capriciousness after decades of stability. And so he comes out with this piece here in Spiegel saying that Mr. Trump is only capable of destruction. And he talks about the nuclear deal. He talks about the nuclear deal because Europe wanted to stay in it. And the reason that Europe wanted to stay in it, although the leaders would tell you it's just because they believe that this is the way that we keep Iran from building a bomb. When really everybody knows that the reason that the Europeans are in it are for the short-term gain or economic gain that they benefit from the Iranian economy. Germany has $38 billion a year coming out of the Iranian economy. We're in deals with the Iranian economy right now. They don't want out of the nuclear deal because of the financial benefits it is currently bringing them. Currently, when they see Iran not racing as they see it towards the bomb. And so why not stay in it a little bit longer? Why not stay in it and negotiate a better deal for a little bit longer? Now, back when Mr. Trump decertified this deal 6 months ago, this is what Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had to say about the economic benefits that Europe is currently getting from Iran.
So you do believe that for example, will join in on perhaps potentially snapping back those sanctions against Iran then?
Well, I think if the U.S. decides to do that on its own, it can do so by its own because it has such immense economic leverage. And I think the Europeans, once they think about it, will see that the president is giving them an opportunity to avoid something that is very bad for them today. None of us as leaders should, sacrifice the long term or even the middle term for the short term. In the short term, yeah, it's comfortable. They have business ties with Iran and so on that are developing. But in a very few years, Iran will be this humongous power with declared, this is Iran that says death to America, death to Israel. You're the great Satan, we're the little Satan. I suppose Europe in between is a middle-sized Satan. I hope they're not offended. But we're all under their guns. They're developing ballistic missiles, not to fire against us. They already have that. It's to fire against, to threaten Europe, to threaten the United States. So I think when people come around and think about it, they say, we really don't want this bad deal to go through. We really should act now to correct it.
And yet here we are, 6 months after he gave that, and Europe is staying in it. Europe wants to stay in it. Europe's told even Iran that they're willing to work around the sanctions, at least as much as they can, that the United States put on. And so they have chosen the short-term goal of preserving their economic benefits. Instead of pulling out of the agreement, increasing pressure on the Iranian regime to stop what they're doing across the Middle East. And this week, there was so much evidence of what Iran is doing across the Middle East. So much so that they actually fired 20 missiles for the first time in decades, directly by Iranians firing those missiles against Israelis. Of course, no damage did occur in Israel. These were fired from Syria by the Quds Force inside Syria. 20 of them, 4 of them were destroyed by the Iron Dome system, and their other 16 fell on Syrian territory. Nevertheless, we did get some insight as to what Iran's goals are in the Middle East. And it's interesting that people, and I watched a lot of commentary this past week on Mr. Trump's decision to pull out of the nuclear deal, and so many people were saying how this jeopardizes the future peace of the Middle East, and how it makes it so much more dangerous in the Middle East, when we had so much proof right away, a day later, of the fruits of the nuclear deal, the fruits of the money that Iran got from the nuclear deal, the billions of dollars they got immediately, and then the opening up of their economy to the world, and the money that has happened since, the money they have got since then, the revenue they have got since then, the budget for the IRGC Quds Force has tripled since the nuclear deal came into effect. Of course, what Iran has been able to do over the past 2.5 years of the nuclear deal is directly to do with the money they receive from this deal. Could have Iran been able to support Syrian President Bashar al-Assad so much in the past 2 years to stop him from falling if they didn't have the revenue streams that they have from the Iranian nuclear deal? Could they have done that? Could they have positioned themselves to the point where they can fire on Israel with advanced rockets from Syrian territory if the nuclear deal couldn't go through? Could they have afforded to pay Pakistani, Afghani, Lebanese mercenaries in Syria, in Iraq, to fight for them? Could they have afforded to pay a lot of the Shiite militias in Iraq to fight for their interests in Iraq as they have gobbled up that country? Could they have afforded to do all of this if the nuclear deal wouldn't go through? Of course not. And so for those that were championing the nuclear deal this week or talking about how disastrous it is that the United States has pulled out, they failed to connect the next day's activities, that Iran was on the march through the Middle East, that they were populating countries such as Syria with their own people. This isn't just a proxy fighting for them. It's actually Iranians firing on Israel from Syria. For somehow, people couldn't connect these two things together. And yet, for Mr. Trump, for Israel, they are directly connected. Now, what's interesting by this, though, is as we talk about this second event that took place this last week in the Middle East, that is this attack by Iran on Israel and then the retaliatory strikes from Israel against Iran in Syria, it is what Europe's response is to that. And this is actually surprising, and in many ways it's incomprehensible. For all of what Spiegel is saying about Trump's foreign policy and how it's kind of crazy and chaos follows wherever he goes, really it's European foreign policy on Iran that is incomprehensible, that is surprising, that is unintelligible in a way, that they would funnel money into Iran and then come out and condemn Iran for the use of its weaponry against Israel. And that's what they did here. This is interesting. It's a piece by the Jerusalem Post dated May 11th, same day that Spiegel piece came out. It's entitled this, Rare EU Backing of Israeli Strike Against Iran in Syria. It starts out this way. In an unusual move, the European Union stood against Iran and defended Israel's right to launch self-defensive strikes against Iranian targets in Syria. And so on the one hand, they're saying, let's keep the nuclear deal open. Let's keep that working. We'll keep funding the Iranian economy with our businesses, with our companies going in there, working out all kinds of deals. And yet when they see that money put to use in striking against Israel, they condemn Iran for it. It's like they don't expect Iran to use the money, or the Iranian regime to use the money to continue its acts across the Middle East that work against other state actors, to continue to terrorize other countries. It's like the Europeans are surprised by this somehow. And so Iran decides that it's going to attack Israel with forces that are inside Syria, funded, of course, by the Iranian regime, funded with money that they get from the nuclear deal, and they come out and they condemn it and they side with Israel. This is what the EU said. Israel has the right to defend itself. This was an EU statement. And then further on the article, it says this. The EU spoke out hours after the United Kingdom, Germany, and France issued similar statements. While the EU often talk globally about Israel's right to defend itself, it is rare that they and the EU issue such wall-to-wall support for the Jewish state's military actions in response to a specific incident such as this one. And yet that's what they did. The EU said they should, it's extremely worrying that there was this strike. All actors should show restraint and avoid escalation. That's their normal terminology. But they came out, each one of them, and blamed Iran. They blamed Iran from their direct military provocation against Israel. And this is another, the French foreign ministry went further and said this, quote, they warned Iran against any temptation towards regional hegemony, end quote. That's what France did. France's foreign minister, before talking about this, saying, we've got to stay in the nuclear deal. We've got to stay in the nuclear deal. Meanwhile, why does Iran want to stay in the nuclear deal? Because of the economic benefits they receive from Europe. And so when we see that money put to use and attacks come against Israel, then we have them saying, well, you shouldn't. We warn you against any temptation towards regional hegemony. What do they think motivates the Iranian regime? Of course, they're going to use the money from the nuclear deal towards increasing their regional hegemony. And we see that play out. We saw that play out this week. The German foreign ministry said this, we are deeply concerned by reports about last night's Iranian rocket attacks on Israeli army posts. These attacks are a severe provocation that we most strongly condemn. We have always emphasized that Israel has the right to defend itself. Okay, Israel, you've got the right to defend itself against attacks that are caused, at least in part, by the fact that we are sticking with this nuclear deal, pumping the Iranian economy with funds that directly sponsors their terrorist activities across the Middle East. Surely Israel can look at this and say, it's kind of nice to see that they're actually at least vocally supporting us this time, and they kind of see what Iran is doing against us. But how about you stop funding that? How about you stop adding fuel to the fire, the Iranian fire across the Middle East? How about you do that? And that's why Israel is pretty much wholeheartedly supporting Mr. Trump in the fact that he put out that he's out of the nuclear deal. Sure, the nuclear deal, we can talk about that and whether it actually stopped the nuclear program or not. Obviously, Iran wanted to continue their nuclear program, would have continued their nuclear program. We're only going to stay part into the deal as long as they could to get the necessary funds to do what they wanted to do across the Middle East. That's why they like the nuclear deal. They needed the money. And we can argue whether Iran's nuclear program was stopped or not. And it looks like they definitely wanted to continue it. They kept all their files. There was the sunset clause in the nuclear deal that said past 2025 that they can enrich as much as they want, enrich as much nuclear fuel as they want towards bombs. But how about we just look at the direct effect of pumping Iran's economy full of money? The attacks that Iran perpetrated. Yes, there are only 20 missiles, but look at the whole picture. Look at the fact that Israel struck 50 Iranian IRGC sites throughout Syria. How did those 50 sites get there? Well, I would say most of those sites appeared in the last couple of years that Iran could fund such adventurism, as they call it, in Syria because of the nuclear deal. And then when we see the fruits of it and they do fire against Israel, we have Europe in a somewhat hypocritical manner. You must be able to see that. They say, bad Iran for doing that. Like they thought that they would do anything else. You pump an Islamic regime that chants death to Israel, death to America, that talks about its desire to take over other Muslim countries and be the champion of political Islam. That's what they want. And then we are surprised when they use that money for actions such as this. So the Europeans are in some ways going to have to make a decision. The penny doesn't seem like it has dropped just yet in Europe. And Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu came out and said that in that earlier quote. They have to realize, Europe, that we might be the little Satan, America might be the great Satan, but they're the medium-sized Satan. I hope they're not offended by that, and maybe they are. Maybe they would be. But we see that after they gun for Israel, they are going to gun for Europe. Are you, Europe, going to sacrifice your long-term security for a little bit of short-term gain? That's what Mr. Netanyahu said, and he was hopeful that Europe would come round, that Europe would see that, well, maybe we aren't actually going to be able to change the Iranian regime. We thought that maybe we open up our arms and we allow this the regime to become part of the world community following President Obama's vision. And maybe since they had a moderate in power now, as the nuclear deal was sold to us, the brilliant nuclear deal, the brilliant act of diplomacy was sold to us, that now that they have a moderate in power, that maybe they're going to be different. Surely the last 2 years have shown that they're not going to be different. And yet, we wait for Europe to come around and see that fact. We're going to take a short break right now. And when we come back, we'll talk about what Bible prophecy says about Europe and Iran and the time, the moment in which the penny will indeed drop, that Iran isn't just gunning for Israel, but they are going to gun for Europe itself. We'll be right back.
This is Watch Jerusalem, where history and prophecy come alive. Thank you for listening.
Hello and welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. We're talking about Europe's decision-making when it comes to Iran and how they desire to keep the nuclear deal alive and pump the Iranian economy full of money. And at the same time, they condemn Iran for its acts across the Middle East, where it looks to take over nations and fight against and provoke other nations. And we're talking about when Europe is going to finally wake up and see that Iran doesn't have good intentions. Well, the Bible talks a lot about this moment. In fact, there is a scripture where the Bible captures this moment where Europe realizes that Iran is gunning for them, and it acts swiftly. It acts in a way that we can hardly fathom, really, considering Europe's present state of disorder and how long it takes them to make a decision on anything. And yet, what's interesting with this scripture is that it shows that Iran comes after Europe and Europe acts decisively. Iran is not at this point coming against the United States. At this point, it doesn't look like it's even coming against Israel. Of course, Israel, I think, is already under threat and will have been more and more and more by Iran up to this point. But this scripture specifically talks about what Iran is going to do to Europe and what Europe will do in response. And the scripture I want to talk about is Daniel 11 and verse 40. Daniel 11 and verse 40. And it talks about two players, the king of the south and the king of the north. And it says that the king of the south is going to push at him. And him in this is the king of the north. We have been talking about, or we have talked about, the king of the south being radical Islam led by Iran. And our editor-in-chief, Gerald Flory, has been talking about this for 25 years plus, labeling Iran as this king, or as this king of radical Islam that has a pushy foreign policy. And he made this, he talked about this, this forecast, all the way back when Iran and Iraq, they're virtually the same in size as far as their military power. And why not Saudi Arabia? Why not Egypt? Egypt had a larger military at the time. And yet, correctly, as we can see now, it's very obvious that Iran is this king of the south, who leads, who's a leading state sponsor of terrorism, who's leading the Islamic world, especially now that we see Saudi Arabia kind of pulling back out of political Islam. It's Iran. And Iran, as this king of the south, pushes against a king of the north. And we know that anciently the king of the south and the king of the north were different players. The king of the north was the Seleucid kingdom that had its headquarters in Syria, underneath, just after the breakup of Alexander the Great's empire in the 3rd century BC, 4th to 3rd century BC. And the king of the south anciently was Egypt and the Ptolemaic kingdom there. And they fought against one another for hundreds, 200 years, and Israel was right in the middle of it. We understand that. But looking at this prophecy in verse 40, it talks about this being at the time of the end. Time of the end. And here we are 2,000 years later, Seleucid kingdom's gone. King of the south, or the Ptolemaic kingdom, is gone. So who is it talking about? It's talking about other peoples. The king of the south is Iran, and eventually it is going to involve Egypt as well. But the king of the north is a German-led Europe. That's the king of the north in this. And that scripture in Daniel 11 verse 40 talks about this king of the south pushing against the king of the north, and the king of the north coming against it like a whirlwind. Like a whirlwind, fast, surrounding the Iranian nation, or more than that at this point, because Iran would have gobbled up other nations underneath its cause, or as part of its cause by this point. And so there is a moment coming when Europe recognizes the threats that Iran poses against itself, and it's going to act decisively. Now, what's leading to that point? And that's why we follow this so much and Watch Jerusalem. We look at Europe's reaction to Iran, because this act in Daniel 11 verse 40, this precipitates, and it's like one of the first events in end time prophecy that leads to the coming of the Messiah. It's something that we watch for. There is a push from one power against another, and then another power comes, that power comes against it like a whirlwind and totally flattens it. And so we have this pushy player right now, Iran. And it's pushing on Israel. It's pushing on Europe's doorstep, many other countries as well. And Europe at some point is going to realize that Iran cannot be negotiated with. There is no grand act of diplomacy, like Spiegel said, that is going to change the Islamic regime's mind. It will only be superior force that changes Iran's mind, and Europe is going to act with that superior force. And so, again, we watch what's happening with Iran marching across the Middle East, and we watch Europe. And Europe right now, as proven by these events of the past week, they're a bit wishy-washy on this. Yeah, we'll stay in the nuclear deal. We'll fund Iran's programs. We'll fund Iran's economy, which we hope that money went to the people. I'm sure they did. I'm sure Europe hoped the money would be pumped into Iran internally, but it wasn't, and it isn't. And the proof is there. And then they see Iran attack Israel, and they're like, oh, that's what Iran's doing. And they slap Iran on the wrist for that and say, stop doing that. That's bad. Stop provoking the rest of the Middle East. And yet, on the other hand, they'll fund the program. But at least we do see them in some instances starting to take a little bit of a step back. The penny hasn't dropped yet in Europe that Iran can't be negotiated with. It hasn't, but maybe it's starting to fall, especially when they do such actions against the state of Israel from Syria. Now, if you want to read more about what Iran will do, how they will push at Europe, what Europe's response will be, and how that really does set off a cascade of events that lead to the coming of the Messiah, you can read and request our booklet. It's entitled King of the South, King of the South, and it will keep you so up to date with what Iran is doing, and it'll give you the foresight to see where Iran is going as far as its strategy goes and how it will push against Europe. Thank you very much for listening to the program today. If you'd like to send us some feedback, you can go ahead and email the program by writing your emails to letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.